Morning, everyone. Today, we begin chapter 8, Perek Ches, in Tanya. Okay, so in the last two chapters, we were introduced to the concept, to the idea of the unholy side within us, the klipa element within us, which is the klipas noga. We learned that we have, besides for our nefesh elokis and our godly soul, we have an animal soul. Animal soul comes from the realm of darkness, and everything it does is darkness. All that the animal soul does is darkness, because it's inherently not attached to Hashem, and therefore it promotes behavior that is unconnected to godliness. That's why Hashem gave us a godly soul, which promotes and drives us to in the matters of Kedusha. So these are the two powers within a person. So in the earlier he described that what is considered unholy, he said everything that is not directly involved in Hashem, in furthering Hashem's interest in creation. I shouldn't say that, because everything is involved in furthering Hashem's interest in creation, even things that are anti-godliness, because in the end, they too end up promoting and pushing towards holiness. But we're saying anything that isn't visibly and apparently connected towards Hashem's will, means anything that isn't a mitzvah, or at least supporting a mitzvah, with intention to support a mitzvah, is already considered to be unholy. That's why he said all stuff, all matters that take place within the world is unholy. It's why this world, without an effort, is an unholy world. Everything that takes place, he says, is ma'ase, kol ma'ase, olam hazeh, kashem v'roim. All the actions and activities of this world are harsh and evil. And it's our job to rectify it by introducing holiness to it. So then he began to explain how the various components of this world are divided into two forms of klipa. There is those klipas that are totally opaque, which means their concealment of God from holiness is complete, and therefore there is no way that we can elevate them to Kedusha. And then there's elements of this world that are elevatable, and that's the job of a Jew, to enter into those. Hashem put us in a body, he put us in the world, so that we can take these things and bring them to Kedusha, increase the boundaries of holiness. And that is, he explains, all kosher stuff are from the klipas noga. They are klipa. And as we're going to learn today, especially, I'm going to learn that these things cause, if a person does not elevate them, they cause a lot of damage to the human being. They further and distance the person from Hashem. However, they are elevatable, which means we could remove the klipa, take the spark that's in it, and bring it into the fold of holiness. And that's our job. And when we do that, we cause tremendous celebration in the heavens above. We fulfill our purpose in this world. Those are all kosher things, all kosher food and so forth, and all kosher, whatever is permitted in the Torah outside of the realm of food, all activities and actions that are permissible, like just a ordinary conversation that does not have any sinfulness to it, doesn't have any gossip, lashon hara, things like that, all that could be, it's not holy, but it could be made holy if you use it in the proper fashion. Like he said earlier, that humor, jokes, you could use it for the right purpose in order to entertain, so to bring a little entertainment, make people happy, and then draw them closer towards serving Hashem. That is or starting a class with a funny thing, remark. That is all conducive to holiness. So then you're using these things into Kedusha. If a person does not, as we said, it remains in the realm of the unholy, of the klipa. Then he says there's another element to the world, which are the shalosh klipos atmeos, the three utterly impure klipas, which are totally and completely and with a thick and opaque covering on Kedusha. And we can't elevate them. Those are all the non-kosher things in this world. Everything that the Torah says is prohibited. If a person eats non-kosher food, then that energy, first of all, the food itself, and the activity that the person did is what's it called again? It's locked in the realms of klipa, of the unholy, and it cannot be changed to kedusha. If a person later uses that energy or tries to serve Hashem, it doesn't change. You can't elevate that which is against Hashem's will, that which is in Shalosh Klipas Atmeyas. There is no way to elevate it. That will only be changed. If Klipas Noigat, the sparks of holiness that are embedded in the three impure Klipas will only return to Kedusha when Mashiach comes. When the spirit of impurity Hashem is going to remove from the earth and all sparks are going to return back towards Kedusha. Until that time, if a person engaged in a sin, the energy they inserted in that sin is there forever. And sadly, not only did they take positive energy, holy energy, God forbid, and lower it, imprison it into the realms of darkness, but even to a worse degree, it causes a strengthening in the realms of the klipa. It makes the unholy stronger. Why does it make the unholy stronger? Because it adds vitality into them, increases their energy. And that's why it's a terrible thing. We learned last week, there's one way we can elevate that. If a person does a very, 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 very high tshuva, which means he experiences a love to God, a very intense love, a love that can only come from a soul that has experienced serious abuse, serious disconnect from Hashem. So that neshama, that soul, as we said, it's coming from the very separation, from the very sin itself. So then that can transform the negative act itself and now redefine it as an entity, as an impetus for holiness, as a catalyst for holiness, because it is driving that very sin itself, that very breakage in a person's life and separation from God is now fueling their return to Hashem with added vigor and excitement. And they would never have achieved that had they not, God forbid, dropped into such darkness and such separation. So now those very, very negative elements return to become holy. That's what we learned last week. That's the idea of it being usser. Usser meaning stuck in the klip. We did, however, learn in the end of the class that there is two exceptions to sin, two types of sin, which go outside of this rule. Things that are one type of sin which is easier to rectify, and another kind of sin which is even harder to rectify. See, he actually mentioned something in the end of last week's class on two extremes. Generally, sin is locked in klipa. The only way we can elevate it is Mashiach will come and it will be elevated by God. Or the other way it can be elevated is a person doing this intense tshuva, tshuva mahava rabba. Ordinary tshuva cleanses the soul, but not the act of the sin itself. The darkness the person created doesn't change. Intense tshuva, the high tshuva, will change it. He says there's two exceptions. One type of sin that doesn't need such a high tshuva to be repaired, and another sin that even the very, very high tshuva cannot repair it. And both of them are connected to the realm of forbidden relationships. So he says like this, if a person had a forbidden relationship and created a mamzer, literally created a child, so he says in that case, since the unholiness has become embedded in a physical form, because a body was created, a human being was created from this sin, then the energy can't be any more transformed because there's already a physical manifestation, a sinful creation. So even if the person does tshuva me'ahava rabba, does very, very great tshuva, and we should say that that which he created is now pushing him to holiness, true. But since there is still a signature of that sin in this world in a form of a human being, that form of human being is a mamzer, is an illegitimate child, that is a stain that can't be changed. Besides, he brings from the Mittler Rebbe an interesting thing, that there was a case of a Baal Tshuva who did such intense tshuva, which is even higher than Hava Rabba. It was a soul-wrenching tshuva, which was so deep that as a result of his tshuva, all the mamzerim that he created died. Because he schlepped out the chayos, he schlepped out the energy from the klipa, and then they were left lifeless. And that's why they all passed away. This was a known story that happened in his times, in the days of them, but that is a very, very, very high tshuva. Yeah, if we learn it, he doesn't mention that in the Tanya. Or there is another type of a sin which is easier to transform, bring, not that the sin is less severe, but it's easier to bring the chayos back to kedusha, and that he says is the sin of wasted seed. When a person engages in that kind of a sin, they're doing a big avera, and they're increasing. He says, on the one hand, the powers of tumah that is created in the world as a result of that sin is very intense, but on the other hand, it's not inserted it's not trapped in a vessel, in a keli of klipa. That's why it's easier to take it back. And how does a person take it back? He says two things. He says, through proper tshuva, which means a strong, proper tshuva would probably mean strong resolve not to do it again, and returning to connection to Hashem. And the second element that he says is saying Kriya Shema, the nighttime Shema, the one that we say before we go to sleep, with a lot of kavana. And when we learned last week, what does a lot of kavana mean? Kavana means with pirish amilas, really thinking the words that you're saying when you're saying Kriya Shema Shalamita. That has a powerful rectification ability to bring this back. The person does not have to have the tshuva mayahava rabba to cleanse, to purify that sin. However, interestingly, which I didn't mention last week, that's in as much as cleaning up the mess that happens in the world. It's easier to bring back the energy back into Kedusha. In terms of purging one's own neshama from the ra, over there we learn in Ageras HaTshuva, in the other section of Tanya, this sin requires a deeper tshuva than other sins. So it depends, he's so technical over here. Depends on what we're talking about. Cleansing of the soul, the sin of wasted seed needs a tshuva, called a tshuva yalah, the higher tshuva. That's the only way one rectifies his own neshama. But in terms of cleansing the mess, other averas are harder to rectify than this sin, because you're able to clean it up quicker because it hasn't yet gone into the what he calls the nukva, the klipa, the feminine element of klipa, so it's easier to restore it back to Kedusha. With that, we begin Perek Ches. So now, in this chapter, now I do want to make an introduction before we learn the chapter. In this Perek, he is going to be, in a sense, what we might call very musardik, meaning he's going to introduce some very harsh elements of rectifications and elements that happen to the neshama after it leaves this world if the person gets soiled with the impurities of klipa. Now, Tanya is a Hasidic sefer. Hasidism generally doesn't focus on these negative elements. They quite, on the contrary, focus on the positive. So there's two things I want to say about it. Number one, sometimes a person lives nice and easy, go through their lives, and you don't know about these things, so you kind of live and you have nothing to worry about. And you say ignorance is bliss. Yeah, but first you have to know the facts. We have to know the truths of life and afterlife. And it's good that things don't come as a surprise when it's too late. So it's good to be able to rectify things at an earlier time. That's number one. Secondly, the Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe over here, is not in the state of what's it called again, telling us these things in order to scare us from sinning. That's not the thing. He's not really talking about the punishments. What he's trying to show us is the severity of the very act itself. How dangerous involving oneself in this physical material world is, and how cautious we need to be in order that we do not create barriers and separations that separate us from Hashem. If this is a book that is teaching every single person of how to have a full-fledged relationship with Hashem, we need to steer clear. He has to say very clear about things that will serve as a serious interference and interruption between the person and Hashem. And he's going to explain. So from looking at what it takes to rectify it, we can get an understanding of how contaminating these things are, that it takes so much to cleanse it. But that's going to be a little later in the parak. I just wanted to make that as an introduction. Okay, so let me learn like this. Now he's going to open up the parak and say that there is a specific severity and seriousness that involves only non-kosher food. Because we mentioned last week that the realm of the non-kosher is many things that involve the non-kosher. There's non-kosher food, there's non-kosher relationships, there's non-kosher speech, there's all kinds of stuff. However, non-kosher business, activities and stuff. However, there is something particularly harmful which comes from eating non-kosher food. And that is what he's going to add over here, that there is a stringency and a seriousness about it, and that's why we have to be extremely, extremely, extremely cautious. Now we find that a source to that in Nigla, in the revealed part of the Torah, that there is an halacha. It says that Hashem protects a tzaddik from doing an avera. Sometimes a person doesn't have Avera b'shogeg. He didn't know that something was a sin, and he did the Avera. So it says, lo yu'una l'tzadik of kol ovin. I think that's the lashon of the pasuk. A tzadik will not end up even sinning by accidents. Hashem protects a tzadik from sinning. So Tosfos says, however, very interesting thing, that protection that Hashem protects a tzaddik is only b'midah da'achila, only in an element of food. That means that when it comes to food, Hashem will go out of his way to create some kind of a miracle or some kind of a thing, that even if a tzaddik was about to eat something treif, it's going to fall down on the floor, it's going to get dirty, a cat will come and grab it. Something will happen that the person will not eat this treif of food. But it's only by food, Tosfos says, but not by other things. So we see from here that the sin of food has a certain damaging quality to it, element to it, that why the person needs excessive protection from it. Like we found countless tzaddikim, that if chas v'shalom was something treif or something this, they didn't eat it. Sometimes, okay, we have so many things that they felt it, they just would not eat it. They pushed it aside, they wouldn't touch it, and later they found out that it was treif. The famous story was Rav Nachum of Chernobyl. Rav Nachum of Chernobyl once there was milk that was brought to him every day. He had a glass of milk or something was brought to him, and he didn't drink the milk. And then later they came running that by mistake this was non Chalav Yisrael milk that they had brought for him, and they came to say, oh, but then they saw it was there. So when they asked him, they apologized that they put the milk and it wasn't kosher. He said, what milk? They said, the milk that was given to you. He said, what milk? I said, but there was milk. You know, the milk that's always put. He said he didn't see the milk. So there was milk in front of him. He just didn't see it. And he explained, the Mishnah says, about chalav shechalvo akum, milk that was milked from a cow, ve'en Yisrael ro'eyu, and a Jew was not overseeing it. That's a simple meaning. That there was no Jew overseeing the milking, and that's called chalav akum, chalav stam, that there wasn't a Jew that was overseeing it. He says, the meaning is chalav shechalvu akum, milk that a non-Jew milked, ve'en Yisrael ra'eyu, and a Jew doesn't see it. Because if it's not meant for a Jew, you don't see it. So someone who has purified himself so much like a tzaddik to be a conduit for the divine will, something that is not meant for them, something that is not meant to be in their world, it just passes their radar. They just don't see it. They didn't see it. So we have many, many tzaddikim who had stories like that Hashem protects them. Or they're just themselves so sensitive not to. But why is that? What is it about food that is so severe? So we'll learn over here. So let's see, Perikhas. V'oid zois, chapter 8. V'oid zois b'macholos asuris. There's another element to forbidden foods. Shelakach nikro and b'shem isur. The reason why they are called isur. Isur meaning forbidden. But forbidden also means, what we said earlier, means the word isur means imprisoned, tied, locked. He says there is something about the element of the food itself that is forbidden, that is locked. And that is because, saying like this, before we learn, I just want to say like this. See, every other avera, the avera is not generally not in the object itself. The sin is in the act that the person is doing. A forbidden relationship. A forbidden relationship is in the act, what the person is doing, that's the sin. Right? A person tells a lie, it's the act of what they're doing that creates those words that are sinful. So it's the human's activities that is creating the unholiness. It's creating the klipa over here. However, when it comes to forbidden foods, it's the food itself that is a chefetz, that is an object of klipa. It itself is without, with the person, without the person. This meat, this pork, is shalosh klipas atmeis. And because of that, there is an element to it that makes it, that it's not possible for the person to rectify, as we'll see in a minute, b'pnei. And he gives an example. And he explains like, sha'af mishama ochel machel isur, even a person who ate a food, non-kosher food, forbidden food, b'lo hoda, without knowing, the person wasn't doing, he didn't know that it's forbidden. So on his part, he wasn't doing an aveira. He didn't even know that it was forbidden. Okay? He had no idea that this was. And in a case where it wasn't even his fault, we're not saying that he should have checked, he should have known. Food was served to him by a kosher, from a kosher butcher or whatever. They went to the kosher market. They did whatever they were supposed to do. But in the end, it turned out that the food wasn't kosher. And they take it even extreme to the next extreme. Not only didn't he know that it was not kosher, but they ate the food in a holy way. Meaning they ate the food l'shem shamayim. The person was thinking, I want to serve Hashem. He wasn't eating like a glutton. He wasn't even eating just oblivious to God and just because they want to be healthy, just to eat. The person had evoked within himself a holy consciousness before they ate. A very, very pious person and constantly connected into serving Hashem. So he's saying, I want to now eat to serve Hashem. And he eats the food l'shem shamayim with the proper intentions. And what is that? L'avod Hashem, to serve Hashem, b'koyach achila hi, with the strength that they get from the food that they ate. So you have perfect intentions. The person didn't know at all that this was an aver. Now even a step further. Usually, with permissible food, if you eat it for the proper intentions, while the person is eating it, at that very time, they're already elevating it into holiness. Because they're taking an object that up till now, godliness wasn't visible in it. It wasn't connected in an open way to Hashem. Because anybody else could have eaten this food for whatever other purposes. And this person is now eating it and with a consciousness to serve God. So at this moment, they're already taking it out of the klipa, out of the disconnect state, and bringing it to Kedusha. But now it takes it even a step further. Not only did he intend to do it for the right purposes, but then he actually used the energy for a good purpose. See, there's two stages here. One is that while he's eating, he intended to use it for the right purpose, which is already an aliyah. But we learned already in the earlier classes that there's two stages to elevating food. One stage is at the time of eating, when you're eating it in order to later do a mitzvah, you're already elevating it out of klipa into kedusha. But it's a lower level of kedusha because it's not yet a mitzvah. It's not yet Torah. But if the person takes those very calories that they gained from the food and they burn it in the process of doing a mitzvah, you're davening and you're shuckling, you're taking that energy that you got from the food and you're putting it into the prayer or into the words of davening or into the words of Torah. A person learns for 2 hours after they ate and they have the strength because of the food that they've eaten. So now this food itself, as we learned earlier, becomes part of the Torah learning. Becomes part of the mitzvah, becomes holy words of Torah, becomes godly. So they've assimilated the unholy energy into Kedusha. But in this case, when the person ate forbidden food, that doesn't happen. V'gam po v'asakeh, the person actually affected, and he did so. V'kara, and he read Chumash, or he read Torah. V'hispalil, and he prayed. V'koyach achilahi, with the strength that they got from the food that they ate. Nevertheless, because it was non-kosher food, that energy cannot transform into kedusha. Ein hachayos shebo oilam mislabeshes b'teves ha'toyrev ha'tfila. The chayos, the life force that is within that food, does not ascend and does not get enclosed in the words of Torah and tefillah, kamaya heter, like it would have happened if it would have been permissible food. If it would have been permissible food, then it would have gotten joined. It would have been absorbed in kedusha. But here it doesn't absorb. And by permissible food is the opposite extreme. The permissible food is even if a person ate it like a glutton, and he ate it without any holy intentions. He ate it just to satiate his taste buds. Nevertheless, if later he comes back and he uses that energy to do a mitzvah, or to study Torah, or to pray, he elevates it into kedusha because it's heter. It's unlocked. You're able to convert that energy into kedusha. With something that is forbidden is the total opposite. Even if the person didn't know it's forbidden, there was no intention at all, and they ate it l'shem shamayim with the purest motives, he still cannot take that energy and introduce it into holiness. Mipnei isura b'yedei ha-sitra achra, because it is locked in the hands of the sitra achra of the other side, mishalish klipas atmeyas, from the three impure klipas, and therefore it's not rectifiable. Unless, we learned earlier, last perek, you do the great tshuva, mahava rabba, that great, great tshuva that can take sins and turn it into it. But without that, it doesn't happen. Vafilu, and he continues this, vafilu iser derabanan, and even if it is a iser derabanan, so what comes out, what makes the food so bad, is that now the person has within him a stain of three impure klippas that he can't convert, even if he did it totally unknowingly. This is still part of the makeup, of the physical makeup and the anatomy of the chemistry and the anatomy of his body. And he can't sort of change that. It's not changeable. Different than when you do any other Avera. Any other Avera, the person did the Avera, produced something or projected something unholy, created something unholy, but in as much as they're concerned, it doesn't continue being inside of them something that is klipa. Here, however, there is this black blotch of darkness within their body that doesn't change because it can't be converted into kedusha. Now he says, that's what's so serious about food. Va'filu iser d'rabanan. And even if it's only a thing that is forbidden only by the rabbi's decree, meaning it's not a midaraisa, which means min ha-Torah, a Torah commandment, a Torah prohibition. It's only a rabbi's prohibition. That too, he says, is a chiddush. That too is what's called again deemed the three impure klippas, receives its energy from the three impure klippas. Because one can argue and say, well, if the Torah permits it, and the Torah is the one that maps out all of creation and tells us clearly what things are, to which category of life things belong. So if according to the rabbis, this is a prefer, for instance, I'm sorry, according to the Torah, you're allowed to cook chicken and milk and eat it because it's only bird, it's not real meat. But the rabbis came and said basa b'chalav extends even to this. So we would think that this is not three impure klippas. It's not deriving its energy from the three impure klippas because the Torah permits it. So obviously the Torah is saying that it's from klipas noga, from the glowing shell. And so the chiddush over here is, no, that the rabbis had the ability, when they proclaimed the iser on it, they changed the very condition of this object, that they changed the source, its vitality, its life force, that it should now be deriving its energy from the three impure klippas. And they did that for a reason, whatever it is, that they lowered these things to receive from the impure klipas and not from klipas noiga, in order to keep us away from it, for whatever reason, that we shouldn't come. They did that thing. They have the power to change the very chemistry of the thing. There's a filo isod d'rabbanan, even a isod d'rabbanan. Shechamurim divrei seifrim, yoisem divrei Torah. Because as the Gemara says in Masechtas Erevin, that there is chamurim, it is stricter, the words of the scribes is stricter than even the words of the Torah. Simply, the way everybody understands it, it means that we have to be stricter with the prohibitions of the sages. Why? Because in order that people should not be lenient with them, people shouldn't say, oh, it's only the sages, so that's why we have to be even stricter with them. But what we're learning over here is that no, that there is something in the very, very thing itself, that they are stricter, there is a... Because chamurim divrei seifrim, the words of the scribes, are more than the Torah, which means that they had. Now, by calling, it's interesting, by calling them, the sages, scribes, he refers to them as divrei seifrim, the words of the scribes, he's actually adding insight and understanding on why and on how the sages had the power to cause a change in the very mechanics of creation, and take these things and make them receive their energy from a lower klipa. How they have the power to do that? Because we know in Sefer Yetzirah it says an interesting thing. It says that the world was created with three things. B'sefer, b'sipur, or b'sofer. B'sofer, b'sefer, or b'sipur. Sofer is the scribe, the author. Sefer is the book. And sipur is the story. So there is a story. The story is the words that God spoke when he created the world. Then there is the book from where Hashem spoke those words, and that is from the Torah. As we say, Yestakel b'ereiso bara alma. When Hashem created the world, Hashem looked at the Torah, and from the Torah, he read the story of creation, and he spoke the world. So here we have three things. We have the story, what Hashem spoke, from where he read when he created the world. Where did he look in? He looked into the Torah. The Torah is the book which precedes the story, which is where the story is being read from. And then, however, there is something higher than the Torah, and that is Hashem himself, who is the author of the book. Now, the interesting thing is, the sages are called divrei seifrim, the words of the scribes. Why? because Nishmas Yisrael, the souls of the Jewish people, are etched in a place even higher than the Torah itself. They're etched in Hashem himself, as it says in Tana Devei Elio. It says there are two things that preceded the world, preceded everything. The machshava of two things, the thought of two things came before everything else. What were they? Mashach, the machshava, the Torah, and the Jewish people. However, and then the Tana Devei Elio asks, Mi kadma lami, who came before who? Is the Torah comes before the Jewish people, the Jewish people before the Torah? Which means, who is serving who? Did Hashem create the Jewish people in order to actualize the Torah? Or did he bring about the Torah in order to actualize his relationship with the Jewish people? So the Tana Devei Elio says, Yisrael kadmu, that Yidden are even higher than the Torah. Deeper in the divine essence than the Torah. And that's why when you see in the Torah, everything it says, Dabar al b'nei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people, you see that the Jewish people stand even in a higher and a higher place than the Torah. So that's what we're learning, and that's the reason why the sages are called scribes, because they're higher than the Sefer. The Sefer is the Torah, and that they are. And since Hashem created the world through the Torah, through the Sefer, and that's how he created the world, the only ones who can change. And from the book, Hashem described, said that this thing is kosher. So it comes from Klipas Noga. No one can make a change in the book besides the author. The author can make a recall, so to speak, on his book and change the story and through that change it. So the Divrei Seferim, the Chachamim, had the ability to go into the Torah, even to a deeper place, to the author itself, and rewrite the book. So when they came along and they said something is forbidden, it causes a change in the Torah and thereby a change within the creation itself. And that's how they rewired certain parts of the creation, that this is impure klipas, and therefore it's an iser heftza, it's a prohibition that is in the very substance of the object. And that's why he adds these words, that's why he calls them chamurim divrei soifrim. It is serious, the words of the scribes, yosem a divrei Torah, more than a divrei Torah, and that's why the rabbis had that ability. Okay. Lechein, therefore, oh, by the way, it's an interesting thing. In halacha, it says like this. If someone eats, the Rambam paskins this, if someone eats forbidden food, they are not to make a bracha on it. Not a bracha rishayna, not a bracha achron. Person say, you know what, I can't have a taiva. I want to eat it, I want to do an aver. But eat without a bracha, I can't. I've been taught as a little child either. So he wants to make a blessing. The halacha is you don't make a blessing if you're eating something that's not kosher. And now we understand why. Because a blessing is elevating it. This is a bracha levatala, you're not elevating it. You can't elevate it. So the blessing doesn't work. What happens if he does tshuva a minute later and he wants to make a bracha achrayin? Better thing to do is to vomit, not to make a bracha achrayin. Because, what's it called again? You can't make a bracha on it. And it's another halacha, an interesting thing is, that if a person fed if a person feeds his workers with tevel, which means the food and that we didn't separate the portions that you have to separate trumas and meisers and so forth. The halacha is that they didn't know. He has to give them lunch again. The lunch that he gave them is invalid, and he has to feed them again. And the reason is because it's not called eating. What they ate was not called eating. And then that's the Lashon of the Taz. He says, "In loy mikra achila, it's not called an eating at all. Also, if you sell someone, so a butcher sold someone on kosher meat, and they ate it, he has to pay. He has to give them back the money. He can't say, well, you ate it already. So, okay, a taco was not kosher, but you enjoyed it. The halacha is you have to pay them back the money because it's as if they did not have any benefit from it because it's halachically not called eating because it does not belong within the Jewish system. It doesn't belong within our bodies, a non-kosher food. Lachein, and therefore, based on what we learned right now and what we learned also in the last chapter, this lachein that he says now is going on not only what he says over here in this parak in regards to food, but in regards to the realm of all, everything we learned even in the last chapter, which deals with all prohibited things. That the prohibited things are not just prohibited upon the person, that Hashem says, don't do that, but that there is something essentially wrong, there is something unholy in the very object of the Dvar Isser, of the prohibited substance. And it's for that reason, he says, the craving and the desire for non-kosher things is really a non-Jewish craving. He says, the nature, it's an interesting thing, the nature of our Yetzer Hara, of the evil inclination within the Jewish person is not to crave and to desire and to have an appetite for non-kosher things. It's not within our system. It's not part of us. If a person has a craving for non-kosher elements, he's going to explain soon, that is only because they have corrupted their Yetzahara, which means the Yetzahara itself has fallen from what the Yetzahara is. And he explains like this. Everything gravitates to what it has a relationship with, to its dimension, to its world. That's what you're gravitating to. A neshama gravitates to God. Why? Because the soul is godly. So it pulls towards Hashem. Our animal soul, which is a klipa, gravitates to klipa, pulls to klipa, because that's its world. That's where it comes from. It comes from klipa. It enjoys klipa. It finds pleasure. It takes delight in klipa because it's from that world. However, since we just made the distinction, and we said there's two types of klipas. There's klipas noga, the glowing shell, which represents a realm where there is godly energy that is in an unholy state, but it could be brought into Kedusha. As opposed to the shalish klipas atmeyas, things that are impure completely, where it's completely disconnected from God and you can't elevate them. That's why he says, a Jewish animal soul, which is our Yetzahara, will only crave naturally towards permissible things, things that belong in the realm of klipas noga. That's what it wants. That's its Yetzahara. What's the Yetzahara? The Yetzahara is it wants to do these things just for its own pleasure and not for serving Hashem. And that is supposed to be the battle of a Jew. That is supposed to be our fight with our Yetzahara. The fight that we're supposed to have with our Yetzahara is, should I do this to serve Hashem? Should I keep ourselves focused and conscious of our purpose in life to serve Hashem? Or the Yetzahara tries to convince us to have a good time. With what? With kosher ice cream. But as long as it's kosher, just for the sake of indulgence or whatever. That should be the fight between in a Jew's life. Our Yetzahara, our animal soul, does not have an appetite naturally towards things that belong to three impure klipas because they're outside of its realm. It's beyond, it's not within our it's not within our culture. It's not within our Jewish. You know, Jew likes bagels and lox, herring. These are Jew kugel, chalent. Sushi is also a new type of a thing. It's a Japanese thing. But it's kosher. So there is a hamshacha, a draw of our animal soul to these kind of a things. However, things that are forbidden, that are from the realm of the impure klipas, is not Jewish. It's not even our Yetzirah doesn't even have an appetite for it. Or anything that is forbidden, forbidden relationships. These are all things. Oh, how then does Echad? What then? Oh, he says, this is the Yetzirah of a non-Jew. A non-Jewish soul, since it comes from the three impure klipas, that's why he finds pleasure and delight, and he finds the realm of the three impure klipas appealing and desirable. A Jew doesn't. However, he says, he can explain, it's possible for a person to corrupt his animal soul to a point where it begins to find pleasure even in the permissible. And he's going to explain how that works. He brings this from a Zohar. The Zohar says that there's a difference between a Jewish Yetzirah and a non-Jewish Yetzirah. A Jewish Yetzirah is called a Jewish demon. Sheid Mesheidin Yudan, a Jewish demon. A non-Jewish Yetzirah is called a Gentile demon. And the Jewish demon and the non-Jewish demon are two different demons. Two different kinds of Sheidim. We have a different kind of a Yetzirah. Elechein. This is all based on what we learned now. Since there's a difference in the very objects themselves, not just that this is Hashem said don't do it, but the object itself is from a lower material, the Jew doesn't have a desire for it. He says, Ulechein, and therefore, Kam HaYetzahara, even the evil inclination, V'koyach HaMesave, and the power of lust, L'dvarim HaAsurim, that is forbidden things, Husheid, it is a demon, Mesheidin Nechroin, it is an alien demon, it's a demon from the non-Jew. Shehu Yetzahara Shel Umay Sa'olam. This is a Yetzahara of the nations of the world. Shanaf Sheiseyem Misholesh Klipis Atmeyos. Since their souls come from the three impure klipas, that's why they can gravitate towards those things. Ma she'en ken ha-yetzahara, which isn't the case of the evil inclination, the koach ha-mesaveh, and the power of lusting or desiring, the dvarim ha-mutarim, to permissible things, lamalas tavasoi, to fulfill one's gratification or one's just physical pleasure, without doing it for a holy purpose, who shade meshed in your dom? That's the neshama doesn't want that. That's coming from the demon that's within us, which is what demon that's inside of us? Our Jewish demon. The Jewish demon finds pleasure and delight in permissible things just for the sake of pleasure, but not chas v'shalom desire that which is forbidden. Why? Now the question. Now the question, however, is, didn't we learn in the last chapter? He's going to help me. We learned in the last chapter, when a person indulges in food just for the sake of pleasure and indulgence, they take the food, which is essentially from the klipas noga realm, from the pure, from the glowing shell, and they drag it down into the three impure klipas. Now, if we're saying that a Jew has no connection with that whole domain of the three impure klipas, so how can it be that a Yid has a taiva just to indulge his appetite, just to indulge his himself in permissible things for the sake of pleasure, when that too is entering the domain of the three impure klipas? Why? Because the person is being over on the avera of kedoshim tiyu, being holy. And being holy means always not to be an animal, but to always be connected to Hashem. So if that's the case, how can we say that a Jewish soul has an appetite in Nefesh HaBahamas, which comes from Klipas Noga, to an act that involves three impure Klipas? And that he explains now, because true, even permissible things bring the person into the realm of three impure Klipas, but we said we made a very strong distinction. The person is coming into the three impure klipas, but they're able to come back. It's not bound, it's not tied to the three impure klipas. Since it's, even if it goes into their vicinity, into their area, but it's not there in a permanent way, that's why it's possible for a Jewish soul, for an animal soul, to have that kind of a desire, because it's not really, really the three impure klipas in a permanent state. In other words, things that are non-kosher are stuck in the shalosh klipas, that's why they're called isser. Isser meaning bond and locked and imprisoned, can't be go back. So a Jew doesn't have any desire for them. However, things that are permissible, but the person is doing it with a lustful way, and thereby bringing it into Shalosh Klipas Admeis, it's a temporary descent, and that's why it's possible for a Jew to have a shaychus to this, to have a connection to it. Because they're able to make a comeback and come back to holiness, like we said earlier. Now the question is, if this is the case, we all ask ourselves the question, what's wrong with me? How come I have all these horrible impulses and desires for things that are forbidden? And this is, am I partially not Jewish? You got to ask the question. That should only desire kosher things and not desire non-kosher things, but we do find ourselves many times craving the non-kosher and the unholy. So here's the thing. A person is able to cause a descent in his Yetzihara and causes Yetzihara itself to become corrupted and, we might say, infected with the disease of three impure klipas. How does a person do that? So the thing is like this. By continuously indulging in permissible things, not for the sake of serving Hashem, that, and as we said earlier, that is at least temporarily bringing the person into the three impure klipas. If the person continuously does that, he causes so much klipa of the three impure klipas to seep slowly into his animal soul, till it causes the animal soul itself to become like that place where he came into and to desire that which he wants. For instance, sometimes you see good Jewish kids. Okay, we know we're living in a very secular world. So Jewish kids, they have a desire. You want to watch the movies, you want to go this, you want to take part in the klipa world, in the world that is unholy. It's enticing, it's exciting. We understand that. That makes sense. You don't have any Jewish kid growing up this that has a desire. One day I heard on the radio they had this whole culture. And I shouldn't be listening to the radio, I see. Really, you shouldn't. But this is one time when I listened, I heard this whole culture they went into. Of these people that are vampires. They get together and they drink blood. They're not hurting anybody with intention. They're not killing people and drinking blood, but they have this enjoyment where they come together and they draw blood. They drink blood. That kind of behavior is not normal for a human being. It's not a natural desire for a human being to have a taiva to drink blood. They don't have that. It's something that comes with such abuse, such degrading of yourself into this. Or like you have sometimes, you know, kids who sadly, you know, drift away from Yiddishkeit, and they move into places where they start doing such ridiculous things, even just to their bodies, of poking themselves with all kinds of piercings and all kinds of tattoos and all kinds. This is outside of the realm of ordinary taiva, of ordinary desire. How does a person come to that? On their own, they would never have developed an appetite and a craving and an appeal for these things. What happens is, if you hang out in the wrong neighborhood, if you hang out with friends, and you're there, and you enter into that culture, so after a while, a person can fall into it, and then you know, with substance abuse and all kinds of other things, you can chas v'shalom degrade yourself to a point that it becomes hard to get out of it. But that's not in any way what we would say the natural desire of this person, of this kid. You saw him 2 years earlier. He never would have dreamt of chas v'shalom, he or she, of desiring such kind of a thing. But they can corrupt their own appetites and their yetzahara. So in order, similar to that, we're learning over here, in a more subtler way. Any kind of taiva, any kind of desire that a person has for the forbidden, for that which is against what the Torah prohibits, are things that are unnatural to a Jew. And it only comes as a result of excessive indulgence in permissible that it causes and as we said earlier, that means hanging out in the wrong neighborhoods. That's bringing the Jew into the three impure klipas, and bringing chas v'shalom, coming into the three impure klipas, then the person can develop an appetite for things that are really outside of the pale, outside of the whole of the atmosphere, from completely alien to a Jewish, to the Jew's Yetzirah, which is a very powerful statement we're learning over here. That in order to sin, for a Yid to sin, he first has to corrupt his Yetzirah, and only then. That's why we have to be so, so cautious. A person can say, I'm not holding on the madrega, I'm not on that level of eating l'shem shamayim, of serving God, of always, you know, being vigilant to conscience. I'm a simple guy, you know, let me at least enjoy myself and have a good time. It's not that way, because one thing leads to the other. As a person, the more a person indulges in the permissible, the more, the closer they are to crossing the border, and start slowly, you know, falling into even the permissible. And there's no end to chas v'shalom, how low, if a person is not careful, how low they can fall. So we have to be very, very careful to in that. Ach, what time is it? A little further. Ach, he says. Notwithstanding this that we just learned, that permissible, we're able to return to holiness. We're able to bring back. Forbidden things, we're not able to return back. So this can, however, it means even if you do, we learned now, that even if you did it, even if a person serves Hashem with that energy that he got from the food, the mitzvah, see, it's an interesting thing, the mitzvah is a mitzvah. But the physical energy that they put into that mitzvah does not become holy. It's a very interesting thing. The kedusha remains only in the element of their neshama. What we learned earlier, that forbidden thing cannot become integrated into kedusha. It does not capture the physical energies that were put into it. The physical energies remain unholy energies, even though they fueled the act of the mitzvah. They remain separate from the holiness. The holiness does not connect to those cells and to that energy. It doesn't connect to it, right? However, we learned permissible things you could elevate. So someone might be very, very lax with at least with permissible things. Okay, permissible is nishkeferlach. That's what he adds over here. Ach makol mokim, nevertheless, even by the permissible, koydim shechazel kedusha, before the person returns it to holiness, hu sitra achra v'klipa. This is deemed unholy. If a person eats for indulgence purposes, or as the fifth Chabad Rebbe in his addings to this, to the explanations on this perek, explains, even if they're not eating for the sake of indulgence, but they're eating just to be healthy, not in any gluttonous and indulgent way, but they're not doing it with a kavana l'shem shamayim, meaning the food is not holy, they're not having a holy intention, so then before it returns to kedusha, hu sitra achra v'klipa, is sitra achra, it's the other side, v'klipa and klipa. That's why he doesn't mention the three impure klipas, because it might not be the three impure klipas. That's only if he does it with indulgence. But it's klipa. It's still klipa. Noga is also a klipa. It's also an interference and a separation between the person and Hashem. And now he takes it a step further.
And even when the person does return to Avodas Hashem, and therefore bring it back to Kedusha. In other words, temporarily, while they're doing it and they forgot about God, it's klipa. But even afterwards, when they do take it back into Kedusha, because it's permissible, and you're able to bring it back to Kedusha. V'gam achakach, and even after that, harishimu mimenu nishar davuk b'guf. A little trace of that klipa remains stained on the body, attached to the body, even if they later go ahead and return to Kedusha, and some little trace of klipa remains on the body. Lihiyoy sense, why? They converted it to Kedusha because they used it, and it's permissible, so it could be elevated. He says, Lihiyoy sense, ki mekol macholomashka naset tekev dam ubasar mipsaroi. Since from all eating and drinking, instantly it converts and starts becoming blood and flesh from the person's body. Therefore, 5 minutes later, you're beginning the process of returning to holiness. But during those 5 minutes that you didn't do it yet, the body began to absorb this food. And that food was not yet in a holy state, was still in a klipa state. So now klipa is entering into the body, leaving a mark, leaving a stain of this disease of klipa, of this unholiness. Now, what does it mean instantly? I mean, the food has to digest for it to start being converted into blood and being converted into flesh in the person. So the explanation that is given is, as soon as you eat, even as soon as you give your first bite and the first swallow, maybe not the food that hasn't yet digested, but there is already a strengthening of your kaiches. There is some feeling of like, yeah, you're coming back to yourself. So there is an added physical strength that is added to the person as soon as they're eating. That addition of life that's coming from the food, being that the food is klipa, is now going into the body, creating and bringing klipa into the body, and that's why, elchein, and therefore, tzarech haguf lechibut hakever. Now the question is, why doesn't that, when the person returns to kedusha, why doesn't he take that part that entered into his body also to convert to kedusha? It should go back. So one of the explanations I saw, and they're trying to explain, it's similar to the idea that we said earlier by a mamzer. Once something translates into a physical form, it's harder to take it out. Since it became part of the physical body, in while it was still in an unholy state, it's much harder to convert energy that is settled already in a physical form to turn it into kedusha. Now, this is by food. The food is also physical. But the food, before the person does it, it's klipas noga. Then Hashem gave a special power that we can take the food and elevate it into kedusha. But if the person ate it, not l'shem shamayim, and as we're learning now, instantly, it's moving. So in that semi-sinful state, it's not real sin, but it's semi-sinful state, because anything that is violating kedoshim tiyu is sinful. And in that state, it took on a physical form because it becomes part of the body. That's why it does not change instantly just because the person returned. If he does tshuva, it's different, but he doesn't do tshuva. He's just going back to serving Hashem. That energy that has instantly entered into his body, that part can't be converted. The parts of energy, or rather the part of the food that is yet releasing now, once he's beginning to daven and learn, and his food hasn't yet fully digested, and it's now being digested while he's learning and davening, that is converted into kedusha. But the instant, that which took place while he was eating, and at that time we're learning, the person is not thinking the right thoughts. He's not doing it the right intentions. So that part is not being converted. And that little bit did not be was not elevated when the person returned to kedusha. So it remains klipa. And because of that, he says, the body needs a special kinds of a cleansing. L'chein tzarech haguf l'chibut hakever. The body needs what's called chibut hakever, the purgatory of the grave. What is that? So it's mentioned in Gemara. Rashi brings it, that it's a certain purification that angels come down after a person is buried, and they knock out the body. It's sort of like, and similar to when a garment gets dusty. How do you take off the dust? You bang it, and it knocks off the dust. So this purification, he says, has nothing to do with sin. The purification of the body that every Jewish body has to, that a person has to go through, is, which is very painful, is not a process that is coming to cleanse the body from sin. It's just coming to cleanse the body from dust that has been accumulated. And what is that dust? The partaking in the physical pleasures in this world that were not l'shem shamayim, not serving God, creates a certain impurity within the body, and that gets cleansed by this chibut hakever. It says, "L'tchein tzarech haguf l'chibut hakever." The body needs the purgatory of the grave, l'nakoisoi, to cleanse it, u'l'taharo, and to purify it, mitumaso, from its tumah, from its defilement, shekibul bahanos olam hazeh, that the person has received by having enjoyments of this physical world, v'tanugov, and its delights, mitumas klipas noga. This is not from the three impure klipas. This is even from the very, very subtle klipa, klipas noga, from the klipas noga, v'sheidin Yehudon, and the Jewish demons. Now, the Jewish demons, that, which was the lust within the person, that initially prompted the person to eat the food without higher intentions, that tumma from the animal soul, that from that unholy demon, and the tumma that came from the klipas noiga that's in the food that came onto the person, needs to be cleansed through the purgatory of the grave. Elam Kain, the only way that a person does not go through this purgatory of the grave, he says, Mi shaloi nehena ma'olam hazeh kol yamav k'rabbeinu HaKadosh. Someone who did not have any pleasure all his life from physicality, like Rabbeinu HaKadosh, like Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, the author of the Mishnah, he raised his hands before he died, and all his 10 fingers, and he said, he made a proclamation. He says, I did not take part or have any delight from this world, even with my small pinky. And the Chiddush is Rabbeinu HaKadosh, who was the ultimate wealthy Jew, and as the Kacharashi says, there never was missing mustard from his table. Nevertheless, he says, in the end of his life, he never had enjoyment of the physical enjoyment. So one way is, as the Shlach HaKadosh writes, is that even though it says about him, he wasn't the one who ate black bread. He had this royal table, and he had the emperor of Rome who would come and join him for their meals, as we know, Taninus and Rebbe. So it says, however, the Shlach HaKadosh says that he did it. His intentions were only to serve God. He never had any intentions of to have any physical pleasure. But as it is explained deeper than that even, that literally like great tzaddikim who didn't have the physical pleasure at all. In other words, even when he ate the physical food, not only didn't he intend for the sake of this, he didn't feel any physical delight and pleasure from it at all. It was his mind. It wasn't in that frequency. It didn't give him any kind of a pleasure, even though he had all these things. And explained, what does he mean over here, people who didn't have any benefit from this world? How about a person that eats l'shem shemayim for the right purposes, but can't help and enjoys the food? Does the person need chibut hakever? So there's two, it's mashma like this and mashma like that. Sometimes it's mashma and explain that a person who's eating l'shem shemayim, even though they're not on the madrega, not on that level, not to have the actual pleasure from it, it's okay. Because they're, saif kol saif, elevating it to holiness because of their intentions in Kiddush. Other places, it's mashma, that since there is some aspect of delight on the physical level, there is a certain impurity that's there that still needs to be cleansed. We'll try to go with the first one, that if a person has, at least does the best they can, to always have kavanah l'shem shamayim, then they're protected from this. I also mentioned to Moshe the other day, that it does say that the way to become pater from chibut hakever, there's a way to do it. I mean, ifchad, we all know that we are guilty of this crime, of enjoying this world. Is that if a person spends a sixth of the day, a sixth, which is 4 hours of the day, as in saying words of Torah, holy words, that protects the person. Then the person is exempt, and he doesn't have to go through this process. So a sixth of the day, every single day, at least 4 hours a day, to be spent saying words. That's what is brought down in Hayom Yom. The shir to be pater from Chibut HaKever is to spend at least a sixth of the day saying words of Torah. Okay. Be'ezus Hashem, we're going to continue next week.